It is 6:08 on the Central Coast. It is Tuesday, June 14th, Flag Day, 2022. If you have a flag, I hope that you are sharing it with the rest of us. In this last hour, this was reported by Associated Press today. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell announced his support Tuesday for his chamber's emerging bipartisan gun agreement, boosting momentum for modest but notable election year action by Congress on an issue that deadlocked lawmakers for three decades. The Kentucky Republican said he hoped an outline of the accord released by 10 Democrats and 10 Republicans would be translated into legislation and enacted. McConnell's backing was the latest indication that last month's gun massacres in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas, had reconfigured the political calculations for some in the GOP after years of opposing even incremental tightening of firearm curbs. It has been far too long since we have been in conversation with Matt Hoy. Mr. Hoy joins us now. Check out his website at restrictedarms.com. Matt, good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Congleton. How are you today?
We're good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
I appreciate you joining us. There's so much to talk about. If you could take a minute, though, Matt, people who might not been following the issue, what are the Republicans and Democrats trying to agree on here? What are they offering?
Well, this kind of gets into one of the subjects that, at least on the pro-Second Amendment side of the debate, have been a little kind of disappointed with this on. This is, you know, they got 10 Republican senators and 10 Democratic senators together, and they came up with kind of the broad outlines. You know, for the record, we still don't have a bill to look at. So I can't, you know, we don't see the details. We kind of see these are our overriding principles. These are the things we want to do. But we haven't seen the actual language and exactly how they're going to accomplish it.
Sure.
But on the pro-Second Amendment side, there's kind of been a lot of disappointment around this. And it's simply because if you look at, it's negotiation and both sides are supposed to, you know, give a little and take a little and whatnot. And the pro-Second Amendment people see it. The negotiation looks like the Republicans kind of struggled to give away less, but they didn't actually get anything in return. In the next couple weeks, and possibly as soon as tomorrow, we may get a ruling from the Supreme Court on the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin. It's widely seen that at the very least, what the Supreme Court is likely to do is to require states that still have concealed carry permits or still issue carry permits that they be what are called shall issue. So if you meet the requirements, you get the permit. You don't have to prove that you've got special cause or anything like that. With that coming down the pipe, there are a lot of people who are saying, you know what, a good thing for the Republicans to ask for in this type of negotiation would be something Mr. Hill there, Craig Hill, has suggested routinely, which is concealed carry reciprocity. So much like your driver's license is good in whatever state in the union you drive through, a concealed carry permit, too, would be good in whatever state of the union you were passing through. That's something they could have asked for. If you look at it from a pro-Second Amendment point of view, they didn't ask for anything. It was just, okay, you know, what ground can we give to the gun control left? As far as, you know, what they've come down with, I think, you know, probably 7 or 8 of the 10 things I don't have a problem with. And in fact, I kind of think are good things. But the red flag laws that they're trying to encourage, I have problems with those because of the due process issue.
And let me just Matt, let me just explain for people who have been following it. According to the Associated Press, the plan calls for the first time make juvenile records of gun buyers under age 21 part of required background checks. Money would be sent to states for mental health and school security programs and for incentives to enforce or enact local red flag laws that let authorities win court approval to temporarily remove guns from people considered dangerous.
Right. I am absolutely fine with the juvenile records being included in background checks. I think that's a great idea. I think in a lot of these cases, you know, once one of your big problems with a lot of this stuff is, and we found this with Uvalde, we found this was the case with Parkland and others, is that people knew and reported, you know, hey, there's something wrong with this person. And they reported it to police, and the police and the FBI did nothing. And, you know, I'm all for, you know, these sorts of laws where you look at the background of the people, but it's always going to count on government doing its job. And as we've seen recently, government not so hot at doing it. I would hope that they would get better. I like the focuses on, you know, funding local, state and local governments to take this issue a lot more seriously. But, you know, like in the case of Uvalde, they had, you know, school shooter training 2 months before the incident, and it didn't seem to take.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, I hope it works. I definitely, you know, I've hosted, you know, for you when you've been on vacation before, and I've, you know, spent hours on, you know, mental health. And especially for students and youth, and in the wake of this, you know, COVID and keeping all these kids at home and whatnot, that's caused problems. And I think we need to focus on expanding the access to mental health treatment and whatnot for young people. And that's, and this is not just about, you know, mass shootings or things like that. This, you know, you've also had suicides among youth skyrocket and drug overdoses skyrocket since the pandemic. And I think a big part of that is, you know, both those things is probably due to the fact that you had this isolation that, you know, it takes a toll on people.
Matt Hoy on this broadcast, his website is restrictedarms.com, getting his reaction to the Senate bipartisan gun safety deal that is slowly evolving. But as Matt has pointed out, there's nothing on paper yet, and the devil is always in the details. We'll pick up that conversation, invite your phone calls a little bit later on. I'm Dave Congleton. This is KVEC. Sorry. Well, there has certainly been a lot of discussion in this country and debate about guns and gun ownership and gun rights in light of incidents in Buffalo and down in Uvalde, Texas. And that has led to this attempt to get something passed through the Senate. House passed legislation. The Senate is going to be much harder. And so there is a bipartisan effort underway. And Matt Hoy from RestrictedArms.com continues to join us to talk a little bit about what might be happening in the Senate and what his concerns and hopes are. We're going to welcome your calls after news at the bottom of the hour. So, Matt, as we're back with you in this segment, I'd like to focus specifically on the 18 to 21 age group of gun ownership. You seem to have some concerns about the under 21, I jotted down, enhanced process.
Yeah, we don't know what that's going to look like just yet, again, because we don't have the actual law to look at. I'm looking at Chris Murphy, who's the Democratic senator from Connecticut's website, and the way he describes it is for buyers under 21 years of age requires an investigative period to review juvenile and mental health records, including checks with state databases and local law enforcement. First off, there's, you know, no kind of limit on how long that takes. You know, I mentioned earlier that I'm fine with, and I'm not only fine with, I think it's a great idea to include juvenile records of, you know, criminal action while a juvenile, including, you know, mental health records as a juvenile in the standard background check. I think that's a good idea. I think that's needed. I think, why haven't we done that before?
Okay.
With the rest of this, you know, this enhanced review process, what I get worried about, because I've seen it happen with all sorts of other, you know, gun laws and that we've got on the books, is that we will have this enhanced review process for kids, you know, people 18 to 21. They're adults. I say kids, they're adults. They're 18. They can vote. They can sign contracts. They can get married. They can get tattoos. They can get, you know, suntanning here in California, the tanning salon.
But they can't drink.
But, well, that's I'll come back to that.
Okay.
So, you know, they can do all these things. I just worry that, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road, the other side's going to say, well, look at all these things we, you know, other extra hoops we jump through to verify that 18 to 21-year-olds are good to own a gun. And 22-year-old and up, we don't do this. This is the old person loophole that we need to get rid of. All of a sudden, you know, the exception's a loophole. So now, you know, you've got to have even more checks for adults, which may, you know, delay that sort of thing. I was actually substituting a year or two ago in a U.S. history class, and we were talking about the Vietnam War. And we brought up, you know, constitutional amendment that was passed because, you know, here were 18, 19-year-old kids who were going to Vietnam, drafted and dying for their country, yet they couldn't vote. And I basically, you know, quiz the kids. Okay, you turn 18. What can you and can't you do? Well, you can vote, but you can't drink. You can't smoke anymore. You can't buy cigarettes. You can't rent a car. You're not an adult for purposes of health insurance because you can stay on your parents' health insurance till you're 26. I'm kind of the opinion is that we need to choose an age where kids are adults, where, you know, and if it's 18, it's 18. If it's 21, it's 21. Let's find an age and stick with it. You know, the debate, there was some debate in the House a week or two ago that I saw where, you know, this was brought up. Well, we should ban everyone under 21 from being able to buy a firearm. Unless they're in the military, in which case we'll give them a, you know, a fully automatic weapon and we'll draft them at the same time. And that seems to be, you know, a disconnect to me. We need to decide at what age we're treating people as adults, and we should do that for everything. Smoking, drinking, tanning salons, owning a firearm. Yeah. When you're an adult, you're an adult.
Well, address this, please, Matt, because I was telling off air that in the previous segments we've done after Buffalo and Uvalde, I would say the number one concern, the number one question I heard in my headphones was from people calling in and saying, why does an 18-year-old have the right to buy just about any gun? And why don't we limit it that an 18-year-old can only buy certain guns and they have to wait to 21 to buy this more advanced weaponry? I believe it was the kid in Texas, the day he turned 18, he went and bought a gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that too. The thing is, we already do kind of have a limit on it. You cannot buy a handgun until you're 21. That's from a federal firearms licensee, from a dealer. You can be given it by a parent or, you know, something like that, but you cannot buy one on your own. You know, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, in lots of cases have, you know, the same self-defense needs that older people do. You know, not everyone goes to college. You know, some people graduate from high school and go right out into the workforce and, you know, get a roommate or something and get a job. You know, I've known kids who've, you know, instead of going to college, they've taken welding classes in high school, and they are dang good welders, and they go out and they make more than teachers do.
And they need an AR-14 for protection at 18?
They, depending on where they live, like anyone else would. I mean, why, if you're living in a bad neighborhood or you know, there's people around you that are not good people, you know, that's, that knows no age.
But do they have the maturity to handle the weapons?
Well, that, now we're back to what point are you an adult?
Skills or psychological?
I think that depends on it. That's a case by case basis that I don't think you can really make, and I'm not sure that the government can make. I've known 18-year-olds who I'd have no problem trusting them with an AR-15 or any other firearm, and there are others that would scare the bejesus out of me personally. But the same is true for 40-year-olds that I know as well. You know.
So I guess that, to me, underscores the need for a background check.
Which I'm fine with them going through. I mean, that's, you know, I think there are lots of people on the far pro-Second Amendment side who think background checks are an infringement as well. You know, that's something that I can, you know, that's where I can give a little ground to the gun control side, as long as, you know, they're not, you know, delayed forever, and they're not keeping people who may need to defend themselves from purchasing something to defend themselves with. But I mean, you know, we're thinking about, you know, I'm picturing this conversation. I'm thinking about 18-year-old boys. You know, there are 18 and 19-year-old girls who have already been in, you know, abusive relationships and may need, you know, defense from an ex-boyfriend or something like that. And we're saying, okay, you're 19 years old, you're old enough to be a mother, you're old enough to be out on your own, but we're not going to let you have, you know, a gun with which to protect yourself.
But there's a
and
difference.
I think that's just.
But isn't there a difference, Matt, between having a gun and having any gun at the age of 18?
Guns are useful for self-defense. I mean, they're not allowed to have handguns.
Well, maybe the law should be changed. Flip it.
Maybe it should.
Yeah. Let's pursue that after the break. Matt, I'm sorry, I got the news coming up. Matt Hoy is back on this broadcast. His website is restrictedarms.com. Getting his take on this attempt by the Senate at a bipartisan gun safety deal. What is in it? What does it mean? What do you think? We'll go to the phones as we continue. You're listening to the Dave Congleton Show. Where we are in conversation with Matt Hoy. RestrictedArms.com is his website, a longtime Second Amendment advocate, talking about the Senate bipartisan gun safety deal that they're attempting in the U.S. Senate in light of mass shootings in Texas and New York and Tulsa. Let's not forget Tulsa. You want to join us? Please do. 805-543-8830. Or 800-549-5832, as you hear Matt express his concerns. We've got Ron with us on KVEC. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good.
You know, if we were still an agrarian society, you know, like the 1800s and what have you, I could understand when somebody who's 12 and 13 and 14 and on up under 21, it was very wise that they knew the use of a gun, because the gun was used for hunting, for protection, etc. I believe, you know, I don't have all the statistics and everything else, but just from memory, that the ones who have done these shootings, when they're the younger ones, they're living at home with their parents. It's not like they're living away and they need the protection of a gun from bad people. And another thing too is that if a father or a mother are gun enthusiasts, what is the reason why they can't buy their, you know, have their own guns and take the person who's under 21 to a firing range? They can go maybe out there hunting with them. Is it really necessary to buy a high-powered rifle for somebody who's 18 or have them be able to buy it?
All right, Ron, hang on. You're putting a lot out there. All right, so, Matt, this is exactly the kind of call I was talking about. People don't understand your point on this. So what's Ron missing in your mind?
Well, you know, the bad people are going to do bad things. You know, there are plenty of people who do own, you know, guns and do take their kids out hunting, and they do take them out to the range, and they do teach them, you know, to respect, you know, firearms. And, you know, 99.995% of them, you know, you never hear, there's never any problems with. Again, you know, for the vast majority of people, you know, you hear this all the time with the cops. Vast majority of cops never have to pull their firearm, but some do. The vast majority of you know, normal citizens never need to pull their firearm or use their firearm, but some do. And, you know, to do a blanket ban based on what is a really a very, very minute portion of the population that's at issue, you know, we don't do that for any other right, you know, just because
yes,
there's, you know, a few people.
Yes, we do.
For example,
can you legally drive a car when you're 14, 15? So, no, they've set a limit. The belief
is
that at 16, you're able to drive a car. If you're 14 years old, and I don't know what the law is, but it should be this way. If you're a parent, you have a car, and you leave the keys around, and your 14-year-old son decides that he wants to take that car and goes out and he kills a family of four, it should be the parents that are responsible for that. And that's, I think, when a parent has a gun in their house or an older brother or what have you, and it's not properly protected from someone who is not legally able to own a gun, quote, under 21, if that was the case, then they become responsible for the actions of that person with the weapon that belonged to them. Just like a person with a car, a parent with a car, if they left their kids around or whatever, you've got to come up with something to stop what's going on. I'm 76, and I had my first shotgun when I was 15 and a half, and I lived in the city, but I went out in the country with some friends and what have you. I bought a 22 rifle when I was 17, all right? Yeah. And I got a pistol when I was 17.
All right.
That's back in the 60s. It changed completely.
All right. Ron, I appreciate the passion. Thank you. And Matt, as you answer this, do we make any distinction with the gun issue, because it is a Second Amendment constitutional right? It's not the same as the right to drink or the right to drive a car.
Right, exactly. And the thing is I always hate, you know, the comparison to cars, because if you start, you know, doing cars, first off, you can drive a car when you're 14. If you're on private land, if you're on, you know, if you've got a big farm or something like that. I mean, there are plenty of people in Paso who own, you know, tens and hundreds of acres of, you know, vines, of grapevines. And there is nothing stopping, you know, them from having when they're 15-year-old kids, drive a, you know, work truck on private property. You do not need a license for that.
Right, but these kids aren't carrying guns for work. I'm not sure that's
a
good comparison.
But you know, on another point that kind of goes against, you know, Ron's, I mean, I appreciate his passion, but he's talking about him buying and owning guns when he was less than 18. Is the gun the problem then, or is it the people? Because, you know, here Ron's in his 70s. He had those guns from a young age. He was, I'm sure, taught to respect them. And now, because some, you know, we've got some nutcases, and we aren't, you know, and we aren't raising our kids, you know, not everyone's raising their kids in such a fashion. We've got all of these external things going on, and we want to get rid of the guns, and I'm not sure that solves the problem.
All right, let's take some more calls. I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish your thought.
Well, we have, you know, they talk about red flag laws and, you know, taking guns away, but then they don't do anything else about the, you know, if it's a mental health issue. And we did have this, you know, this situation in Waukesha, Wisconsin, back this Christmas parade, where a guy just drove a car down the middle of the parade and killed a bunch of people.
No one's claiming that you're going to end all the deaths. You're just trying to reduce the amount. Let's hear from Alan in San Luis. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, hi, Dave. Hi, Matt. I won't mind talking about the age, but first, the question I really have for you, Matt, is do you support the idea of a cool-down period when you're going to buy a gun, no matter what the age?
Fair question.
I don't. Mainly because, first off, it's not been proven that those do much. Second off, there was a lawsuit against California's cool down period, because California, there's a 10-day wait, and there was a lawsuit seeking to create some exemptions for that among mainly people who already had guns, because California has a gun registry. And so the state of California, not everybody, especially, you know, people like Ron, if you bought them 50 years ago, they don't know about those. But
what about the guy?
California knows if you.
What about the guy in Tulsa? He got mad at his doctor. He went and bought a gun and then went back and killed the doctor. He shouldn't have had to wait at least 24 hours, Matt.
Would that have stopped him from doing what he did?
Could have been.
Is there any evidence of that case?
Might have been. I don't know. Well, Alan, what do you think?
Yeah, see, that's exactly the thing I'm thinking of, is that scenario. Because they're angry right then and there, and they go out and do that, and that's the idea of the cool-down period, it might give the person a chance to reflect. There's no guarantee, I agree, but it cuts down the risk, I would think.
Yeah. Let me give you an alternative situation.
Sure.
A woman is leaving her abusive boyfriend, and he said, if you ever leave me, I'm going to come and kill you. And so she wants to go and get a handgun to defend herself. She doesn't own one, but she's been around guns. Her family had guns growing up. She wants to go out and get a handgun to potentially defend herself. Should she have to wait 24 hours or 10 days or whatnot to get that when she's got a threat against her?
Yes, she goes to the police and they'll protect her. You want to? You're really laughing about law enforcement? What, really?
I'm really laughing.
Really?
You ask the police what if they're going to protect somebody in that situation, if they're going to put somebody in her home.
They do that all the time.
I encourage people to Google Carol Bowne, B-O-W-N-E, Carol Bowne, New Jersey.
I know I know the case, and there are exceptions all the time.
And could the go to the police not to be for the protection that may or may not happen, but to get a written exemption from the police department that they could take to buy a gun?
We've kind of had this debate before. The police have no duty to protect you. The Supreme Court has ruled that.
I'm just thinking they could provide the exemption that you need to go to buy the gun.
I don't know.
You can try that. I don't think that would satisfy other people, but...
Yeah, bouncing ideas here.
I'm glad you called, Alan. Thank you. 805-543-8830 for Matt Hoy. On this broadcast, Paul is in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Dave. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, Matt. I really like to listen to you. I don't agree with about anything that you say, but I think you're a strong advocate for your position. But your position bothers me because of how much of a zealot you are. You know, to it. I mean, you're so. I think I like guns. I have guns. But some of the arguments that you present are far out there.
Such as?
Such as, you know, you use the analogy about military. Well, when an 18-year-old kid goes into the military and they put an assault-style rifle in his hands, they don't give him any ammunition until he's fully trained on that rifle. And then even then, they tightly control the ammunition. And that's far different than a kid who, as soon as he turns 18, goes down and buys an AR-15 with, you know, according to, you know, because of people like you, Matt, no training required, no insurance required, nothing required as long as he could pay for it. He can go down there, buy that assault-style rifle, and if he wants to, go kill 20 kids. Because of people like you, Matt.
Let's have Matt explain. Go ahead and respond, please, Matt.
Well, I love the fact that it's my fault. That first off, I think it's horrible. I don't think people should kill other people. I don't think people should go into schools and kill people. My father was at Santana High School when a kid there went and shot two students. Okay? So this is personal to me. My wife teaches in a high school. Okay? The idea that they can do this because of me is odious.
I said because of people like you. You. Not because of you personally, but because of people like you, Matt.
The kid can't, in the state of California, he's got to pass a test. You've got to have a background check. And, you know, the thing is, if someone's determined to do evil, they're going to do evil. You know, some of these people have bought guns at gun stores. Lots of kids get guns out on the street.
What?
They don't have to pass any background check to do that either.
Well, if people are going to do evil, Matt, then why bother using guns for self-protection? They'll find another way to get you.
No, the guns for self-protection give me a chance.
If you allow me, that's the other problem I have with your argument. You act like a gun is the only way to protect yourself, and that's simply not true. The statistics show that if you have a gun and you think you're going to use it for protection, you're more likely to kill one of your friends or family, or you're going to kill yourself with that gun rather than use it for protection. I personally, just right next to my bed, is not a gun. It's pepper spray, you know, because I know that I'm not going to hurt somebody that I love with pepper spray, and that's probably the most effective thing. That if somebody's going to come into my house, it's probably the most effective thing for me to use rather than firing in the dark at somebody.
All right, let me get a response from Matt. Matt, how about pepper spray as opposed to guns?
Well, I've mentioned this before. I think one of the unfortunate things is that when this whole George Floyd thing occurred, they took live PD off the air. Because I think you saw just how effective things like pepper spray and tasers could be, or maybe let me rephrase that, how ineffective they can be in situations like that.
Right.
The statistics he talks about, you know, you're more likely to kill yourself or a loved one or whatnot, that statistic has been widely debunked, although it continues to be thrown out there.
That's simply not true, Matt.
Yes, it is.
That's simply not true.
It only counts if you kill someone in self-defense. If you wound someone who breaks into your house, that's not counted as defense. If you just brandish it and the person runs away, that's not counted as using a gun in self-defense. If you say, I'm going to get my gun and the person runs away, that's not counted either. It's only counted if someone dies. Right. And I don't necessarily, you know, if someone's coming into my house, I don't want to kill them. I just want to stop them. If I can stop them without killing them, then I stop. Then that's fine.
All right. Paul, I appreciate the call. Thank you. Let me get to some of these other callers who've been waiting to join us. We've got Greg in San Luis. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how about a trap door? That's funny. Come on. You know, I'm not saying to take anybody's guns away, but I just don't see the AR-15 thing. I mean, I have friends that have them. I used to compete. I have medals from it all, you know. But I just don't get the AR-15. Why an AR-15?
It fires, unlike what somebody mentioned earlier, it doesn't fire a high-powered round. It fires an intermediate cartridge. It's really a small round for a rifle. It's easier to aim and handle than a handgun. It's got less recoil and whatnot, especially if you're a smaller person.
Are you talking home defense?
Yeah.
Well, everybody knows
stock. Then
it's the best weapon for home defense if you're going to use a gun. It's a shotgun. You know, everybody knows that. Talk to anybody. But you know, here's my question, and then I'll hang up and I'll listen. Why are gun laws working in just about every other country that puts them in place? Like, why? Like in Australia, they work. You know, and in England, they work. You know, and they work in different countries. Why are we so special?
All right, let's talk about that. Greg, thanks for asking the question. Compare us to other countries, Matt.
Well, Australia did confiscate a bunch of guns, and then they had another mass shooting a few years later. The problem you've got in America is we've got, you know, depending on the count, between 350 and 400 million privately owned firearms in this country. I have not heard a good idea on how you are going to collect them. And absent that, there's a right to self-defense. You've got Trudeau up there in Canada who says, I think even contrary to their statement of rights that's part of their constitution, that you can use a gun for hunting, you can use a gun for target practice, but you cannot use a gun in Canada to defend yourself from someone who's attacking you with a gun.
Yeah, didn't he freeze the sale on handguns?
They did all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea, you know, frankly, you have an inalienable right to defend yourself. And that, you know, predates the Second Amendment. That is, you know, that's something the Second Amendment just recognizes. It doesn't create.
Right.
So I'm not and as far as the shotguns, that's a good self-defense weapon. But if you're a small petite woman who weighs, you know, maybe 90 pounds and is maybe 50 or 60 years old, that's going to be tough to control, especially after the first shot, if you need a follow-up. A small AR-15 or something like that would work better.
All right, let me find John in the pommel. Hi, John.
Hello, Dave.
Hi, John.
You know, I mean, everybody's making all these different arguments, pro, against, whatever, but the fact of the matter is the Second Amendment is there to protect the citizens against the tyrannical government. It doesn't have anything to do with hunting or even self-defense. That's always been understood to be a God-given right. But the thing that makes the Constitution unique is that we are protected from a tyrannical government. And when they want to take the guns away, that just renders itself to tyranny.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for that, John. Matt, can I get a short response, please?
Well, yeah, the protecting yourself from a tyrannical government is kind of the heart of, you know, self-defense. You know, it's you're defending yourself from the tyrannical government. So
yeah. Let me squeeze in Matt in San Luis. Hi, Matt.
How's it going?
Good, thank you.
We were talking about earlier, you were talking about other countries and how it works. So I propose we look at other countries as well, like Mexico. In Mexico, they have strict rifle laws. You can only have a bolt-action rifle. You can only have a revolver legally. But yet, there's criminals all over the place in the cartels that have no problem getting weapons. So I propose that what would be different than here? We have a huge market of weapons. Those who follow the law turn them in, and those who don't will sell them amongst themselves, and we'll create a situation like Mexico.
Matt, thanks for calling. Matt Hoy, got about 30 seconds for a response.
Mexico just has one gun store in Mexico City in the whole country for the public. That's what happens when you pass any gun control law. It's the normally law abiding people who are going to obey it. The criminals won't, and you're disarming the people you don't need to worry about.
All right. We'll be back with a final thought from Mr. Matt Hoy. His website is restrictedarms.com. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. No, wrong. Brian, he makes great pasta. at NATO. I'm just saying. Matt Hoy has the website, restrictedarms.com. We are out of time. Other than to thank Matt for joining us tonight and give him 45 seconds for a final thought, Mr. Hoy.
Yes, Dave. There's some good things in this Senate, you know, plan. There are some things I don't like, and there are some, you know, a lot of the devil's in the details. I think we really need to look at the mental health issues. That seems to be the one string throughout all of these issues, is you've got young men who are angry, who are unempathetic, and I'm not sure what the solution is. But we definitely need to identify them. We need to solve this problem that's driving these kids to do that. Taking firearms away from innocent people who may need them to defend themselves not a solution.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks to all our guests today. Thanks, as always, to Craig Hill for his help, and thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow at 3:05. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Oliver, get out of my chair. I'm coming home. Good night.